There's always something new from our sponsor, Text Control. They just released version 30 of their document processing library that includes new document collaboration features. Using TX Text Control, you can integrate online document editing, document signing, collaboration, and PDF processing into your ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core web applications. Whether you need to create PDF invoices, quotations, or reports, TX Text Control provides the developer libraries for all document-related tasks. Check out the new features and see their technologies in action by visiting the live demo at demos.textcontrol.com. That's demos.textcontrol.com. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm chatting with Samir Doshi. He's the author of a new book, The Work Ahead. It's a sci-fi novel with a blind main character. And he also interviewed remotely for his current job at Microsoft, but perhaps forgot to tell his boss that he is in fact blind. How are you, Samir?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out. Let's just start with the basics. We're on a podcast, so everyone can hear us. But you are in fact blind right now. How long have you been blind?
I have been blind for just over 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. You were not blind as a child?
I was not blind as a child. I did have severe myopia, so my vision was pretty well impaired. However, I could use glasses and contacts to achieve a relatively normal kind of vision.
Mm-hmm. Now, my kids and most people who have kids who maybe have glasses or contacts, they measure it in diopters, and nearsighted people, you know, you talk to your average person like, oh, I'm -2 or I'm -1, which means they probably shouldn't drive, but they could certainly walk around town. I think my son's -2 and he wears contacts. I was -12, which meant I would not be comfortable walking. I couldn't see my feet. Whereabouts were you?
I too had a severe myopia. So in one of my eyes, I was -22. In the other one, I was -24. So significantly bad and poor vision. I could kind of walk around. I would be hesitant to do that outside. And with vision correction, I was able to do most things. I was able to drive, etc. But much like I'm guessing with you, my morning typically started with immediately put on my glasses or contacts. And I don't mean walk to the bathroom. I mean, it's there on the nightstand table. I put my contacts in, then start the day.
Yeah, it was. I wouldn't want to leap out of the bed for fear that I would hurt myself. So there was a time there where, yeah, big, thick glasses that were made of glass. And even to this day, I have a big bump on my nose because the glasses were so heavy. This is before plastic glasses. But then fortunately I got LASIK. And then even though I have cataracts, I'm able to see and operate pretty well. So it sounds like your vision was okay for a while there.
It was. And much like your LASIK surgery, I had a, it's called an implantable ocular lens implant, put in both eyes. And that got my -22 down to like -0.25. And my -24 was down to less than or about -1. So I was definitely over the moon with what I could and couldn't see. For example, I know one of the things that really struck out to me was I could see leaves on trees, and I did not know that was something that everyone could see.
That's awesome. How long did that last?
Unfortunately, that was a very brief time. It only lasted 6 months before a retinal detachment, which is kind of common with people who have high myopia, left me blind in one eye. So a short amount of time, but I will remember it forever.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I'm at risk for retinal detachments as well. I'm always watching for the symptoms of that. It's a curtain that falls down behind your eye, and then you can't see.
Exactly. And if any of your listeners ever have that, the prescribed treatment is to immediately go to the ER because that is a reversible condition in some cases. So if you ever see that weird curtain, just go to the ER and your vision can totally be saved.
Okay, so then where are you today from a vision perspective?
Oh, that's a good question. So now I am actually blind. My vision in one of my eyes was destroyed by the retinal detachment. In the other eye, I had a cataract about 10 years ago. The cataract surgery went fine. However, the post-surgical treatment did not go fine, and I had what's called a steroid response, which caused me to have probably about 10 years worth of glaucoma over the course of a weekend. So my vision, if you can imagine, you know, your vision stretches out from left to right about 270 degrees. And that slowly, but it was over the course of a weekend. So it shrunk pretty rapidly to the point where I had about 1 degree of vision left or right. And then whatever was left in that field was, I can see that at about 2400 with correction.
Okay. So you're kind of behind a wall peeping through a hole and thus, you know, between two boards. You're looking through a sliver right now.
Exactly. And the worst part about the sliver is it's a sliver covered in oil. And then the absolute worst part is it's not even at the center of my eye. So it's kind of in the upper left. So I have to, if I want to look at someone's face, I have to look at like kind of their nose to know that I'm looking straight ahead at them.
Oh, wow. So we're inside of Zencastr, which is a web-based application right here. You're in. You pushed all the buttons. You clicked on. You did all kind of things. How are you doing that? How are you able to navigate so deftly?
Oh, so with a lot of practice and a lot of assistance and training on how to work with it. So I'm about 10 years into my blind journey. I do use accessibility software. I used to use Zoom Text. Now I just use the built-in Windows magnifier. I have hotkeys like you could not imagine all over my my gaming mouse. Unfortunately, my gaming days are over, but my gaming hardware addiction lives on for all the hotkey mappability. And then I've got I use the Windows Surface Adaptive Kit on my keyboard, so I can kind of figure out where things are. So what I typically see is when you're presenting and you're using the Zoom tool to kind of show people what you're clicking on, that's how I live my daily life inside of a computer through kind of a tiny portion of the screen at once.
Oh, okay. So I'm zooming just so the people in the back can see. You're zooming constantly and spend your life zoomed in.
Correct. Yes.
Interesting. I saw this skit about 20 years ago that was, I think it was a Saturday Night Live skit, where somebody goes on Oprah and they're blind, and Oprah starts with, "You're such an inspiration." And we all think it's going to go in one direction. And the guy just starts to blow up and he's like, "It sucks. I'm not your inspiration." Have you found that people just want to compliment you on, "Wow, you're vertical and you're blind," and like, "Oh, you're such an inspiration"? And then do you ever just kind of push back on that and say, "Hey, man, it really sucks"?
I don't want to be negative, especially to someone who is trying to compliment me or trying to make themselves feel good. And quite frankly, a lot of times when I'm talking to people, the topic that comes up initially, if I can't avoid it, is, "Oh my gosh, you're blind." But what I typically like to do is, I'm not really there either when I'm talking to a person about tech, when I'm talking to a person about my book, or when I'm just meeting someone in the street, right? There's some other more important reason to be talking to them, and try to typically shift the topic to that. Not because I'm personally offended. I think people are well-meaning and in general, pretty good. So I do want to let them have the moment of realization that, oh my gosh, blind people can do anything. And that's the other part of this. Like, I am aware that I might not be the first blind person that someone meets, but I'm the most recent blind person that they meet. And so I want them to be aware that, you know, hey, we can do everything. And thank you for helping me if they're kind of offering directions or what have you. Mm-hmm.
That is a very healthy attitude. I like that. And actually, that brings us to the next point in the question here, which is, you had an interview. Talk to me about your interview process at Microsoft, which I would have expected you would start with, "I'm blind and I need some accommodation or some accessibility," and you would do that up front. It sounds like you got like all the way hired and then happened to mention that you were blind, which I think is the opposite of what most people would do. Walk me through that process.
Sure. So I did a couple of phone screens. We got to talking about tech, and the topic just didn't come up. I think when I initially applied, there is a thing on the application form that says, you know, demographic information, but it's just a checkbox. So when I checked it, I wasn't sure that anyone knew which of the conditions or what I was checking for. Mm-hmm. However, I got an in-person interview. And the in-person interviews that I was set to have, there were three of them, back to back to back, in the Microsoft building in Chicago at the Aon Center. Mm-hmm. And I had a month to prepare for them. And I'd like to say that really drove me. But what really drove me was the fact that, you know, here I am, a typical software architect, cloud mm-hmm. architect, experience with Azure, and I am being asked to interview with Microsoft, and the imposter syndrome mm-hmm. kicked off like you would not believe. kicked off in multiple ways, right? Like, yeah. Am I good enough? Mm-hmm. Is Microsoft going to be okay with saying, hey, customer, we know you're on this digital transformation journey. Here's a blind guy who's going to help you out. I really felt like I'm not sure if they're going to want that. The only thing I can do when I have these kind of thoughts in my head is like kind of focus on the next tiny thing that I can control. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I thought, you know what I want to do? I want to drive the conversation towards digital transformation. I want to drive it towards Azure. I want to drive it towards the tech that I know about and mm-hmm. the topics that I'm passionate about. So I'm going to make the world's best presentation. And I shopped it around to all the people at my very previous company. I told them, I'm going to apply for this job at Microsoft. I know I'm leaving this company if I get it, but would you help me with it?
Oh, wow.
And like I said, people are typically good. And they're like, yeah, sure, I'll help you. So I had a month to prepare. So I've got this presentation. And Scott, I'm going just absolutely bananas with my imposter syndrome. So I am mm-hmm. repeating this presentation every chance I get, like on the train to work every morning. You know, whenever I'm eating lunch, I'm repeating it in the shower. I'm repeating it so much that if my Irish Spring could talk, it would absolutely tell you how to set up a great Redis caching service.
You're just, right. It's a mantra at this point. You're just mumbling it as you wander around the house. Just
exactly, right? Yeah. My wife knows about it. My daughter knows about it. And, you know, there's this technical architecture diagram. I know where every pixel on that thing is. I know where every bullet is so that in case I get asked during an interview, I can say, let's pop over to slide 2, bullet 2, and we'll talk more about this with an actual diagram that we can talk to.
Oh,
so
wow.
Really, really well prepared. Overly prepared, I might add. But this was my own nervous energy.
Mm-hmm.
The day of the meeting, I show up early because I'm really afraid, like, am I going to be able to get to the Aon Center? It's going to be a long flight of stairs I've got to climb up. How am I going to find the room? And people are good. So the security guards help me upstairs. The receptionist, I told her, hey, I'm blind. Can I kind of peek around the room so I know where everything is? And she's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's get you in there and you can take a look around. I got in. I kind of found my way around the table, put my backpack down, and then realized, okay, I've got like an hour and 50 minutes left before anyone's coming into this room. Right. So at that point, I wasn't sure what to do. I started doing what like my 10-year-old would do in Animal Crossing. I was like, oh, I'm going to rearrange the furniture so I will know where people are going to sit. So move the chairs so that the interviewers only had two places where they would logically sit. Practice getting up from my seat to the screen so I could pop up and down without, you know, running into any cables or tripping on anything. I asked my wife via FaceTime, like, is the presentation on the screen? Am I projecting the presentation or am I projecting my interviewee's LinkedIn page, right? And then finally, the last thing I did was I put my cane in my backpack. I folded it up, put it in my backpack, and put it to the side of the corner just so it would be out of the way. And then I just practiced. So my first interviewer came in, immediately sat down, and I like to call this the boss battle of my interview. because he was later on going to be my boss. Started talking. We talked digital transformation. Fantastic conversation. And then he left. Next interviewer came in, and we were talking about the architecture diagram. We were up there. He was saying, like, well, why'd you use Redis? Why couldn't you have just used another in-memory cache? Why couldn't you have cached a database? Lots of technical questions that we really got into, and it was such a great conversation. It ended with him saying, it ended with his alarm going off and him realizing, oh my gosh, I'm 10 minutes late to the next interview. I gotta go. Last interview was over over Skype for Business at the time, and that went off without a hitch because I had a presentation and everything to go to. And it wasn't until I was at the train station talking to my wife about the interview that she said, well, how did they react to you being blind? And that's when my heart stopped. I realized, oh my gosh, I don't think I told them that I'm blind. But I figured they had to know. I mean, you can tell by looking at me. I've got one eye that's kind of flat from all the retinal detachment surgeries.
You know, but honestly, again, this is the thing. Everyone's different, right? Like, you know, Forrest Whitaker's got a sleepy eye, the actor. He's not blind. He's just got one eye that's just a little bit closed. You know, you wouldn't know I was diabetic unless my tubing of my insulin pump was hanging out. And are you diabetic? Yeah. But if I hid it, who knows, right? Some people who are visibly blind might be, you could tell, but it sounds like you went the whole interview and nobody noticed.
Nobody noticed. Exactly. I assumed that someone must have noticed and just didn't say anything.
But how do you know, like, they could have put their hand out to shake your hand and then you were rude to them because you didn't shake their hand?
That's a good question. Usually when I first meet someone, I automatically put my hand out and the default reaction is to shake the hand. Didn't even occur to me until just now that might have been a risk that I was taking.
Yeah, there may have been like an ending one, but you're right. Like, if you're the first one for the handshake, they're going to go right to your hand. You don't have to even aim, so that you've got that handled.
Do you spend too much effort on handling content in your project? Stop solving boring tasks and get back to code. Let's thank our sponsor, Content.ai. They are the modular content platform that enables marketers and developers to plan, create, and deliver experiences that look and feel great on any channel, not just websites. But if a website is your main channel, you can leverage the CDN-backed content delivery with .NET Core SDKs, .NET Model Generator, and a Fluent API, which makes it easier to filter and order content. What makes Content.ai truly unique is the ease of doing business with them. Hubs in New York, London, Amsterdam, Brno, and Sydney, Content.ai's globally distributed team ensures the success of leading companies like Zurich Insurance, Angolia, and Oxford University. See more at content.ai, that's content with a K, .ai/developers. That's content.ai/developers. Or visit them live at the Live 360 conference in Orlando or Dev Intersections in Las Vegas.
So as I'm listening to this story, though, I will admit, though, that I'm thinking to myself, are you being just really prepared? There was no intent to hide it. Like you said, you put your cane away to get it out of the way. Had you kept it opened up and in the corner, they would have seen it. It wasn't an intent to hide the fact. It was just an intent to focus on the tech.
Exactly. The intent was to make the connection and talk through the tech and talk through the, it's a little cliche, but I really do think there's kind of a joy of bringing someone through digital transformation at their org,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And talking to the interviewers about a topic that they too were passionate about, we quickly moved from, you know, me worrying about, I'm blind, I wonder if I could do this job, to me focusing on, we got to talk about Cosmos.
Right.
The cool things you can do with it.
Right. And halfway through, I'm sure you're realizing, okay, I'm killing it. I don't have to worry about imposter syndrome right now because they're vibing, right? We're going back and forth. And then at the end, you must have felt great because the alarm goes off. He's giving you extra time. You must have left on a high.
Definitely. I left thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I crushed this interview at Microsoft. And, you know, when talking to my wife, I was saying, well, that's just how I feel. Who knows what the interviewers actually, you know, realize. Maybe I was so passionate about technical questions, but answering them in completely the wrong way. Yeah. And, you know, now you and I are both employees here, and we know that that wouldn't actually be the case, but there's that little voice in my head that always kind of has a little bit of doubt.
Okay. All right. So then you get the offer. At some point, you have to mention it. It's not like they're going to pull back, but there might be the fear that they would pull back the offer. Of course, that would be inappropriate. But I think the real question is, can you do the job, which hopefully they saw you doing the job when you did it live in front of them in person?
Yeah, exactly. And even at my – this was not the first job that I got after going blind.
Of course.
I had previously gotten another job while I was blind. So I wasn't too worried about them kind of pulling back the offer. And quite frankly, I was just excited to get the job and go down to the new employee orientation. And on the way, the morning of the new employee orientation, my boss called my cell phone and said, oh, hey, there's another person who's starting today. And he's going to be on my team. He's a guy I know. He's a really good guy. You should see if you can meet up with him. He's about 6'5". He's got salt and pepper hair. And he's driving a blue truck. So if you see him, and you know, then my voice in my head immediately shifted to, oh my gosh, he really doesn't know that I am blind.
And that's, you mentioned it at this point?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I said, Jeff, I'm blind. And there was a moment of, wow, kind of reaction, followed by, hey, that's okay, man. And, you know, we'll get you whatever assistive tech you need.
Oh, that's cool.
But let's just go through the interview. And it's been that level of assistance and, you know, friendliness at Microsoft ever since then.
That's awesome. So here's where I think the real meat of the conversation is then. The pandemic happens. We're all at home. You know, you were on Skype for Business many years ago. Now it's about Teams. I've been working from home for 15 years. How has the pandemic changed things for you? And is it helped you be more, and you and other blind people be more active in the workforce?
So I can't speak to every blind person, but I know for me, it has definitely helped. There are really a lot of real simple things. Like, for example, when I would go meet with customers, we would typically do what every engineer architect likes to do and start drawing on the whiteboard. With those Teams whiteboard, the Surface Hubs, it was easy for me to actually access them. But if a company didn't have a Surface Hub or if a room didn't have a Surface Hub, that whiteboard was virtually invisible. With Teams, suddenly everyone had access to the whiteboard. It didn't matter where you were sitting. I could write on it. I could draw on it, kind of scribble around on it. If you were shy, you had the ability to draw on it just like everyone else. I often think of there's a customer who I work with who has a person who is an architect who is incredibly talented, and he happens to use a wheelchair. So he could participate in the whiteboard drawing sessions in a way that I think previously he couldn't. And it's been fantastic for that reason alone. It's been fantastic because we can work with multiple customers across the country back to back to back to back without having to do things like schedule, well, let me navigate time in the airport. Let me figure out how to get through your building. And let me try to navigate anywhere with my cane, which is always a problem.
Yeah, I can only imagine that, like, oh yeah, we're going to put you on a plane to Sweden tomorrow. Like the psychic weight of just like the, I just want to do my job, but now I have to haul my butt all the way across the world and deal with blindness. Like, again, my only thing is that I'm diabetic, but there's a tax. You know what I mean? I don't know the number, 5%, 10%. There's some tax in the pie chart of the amount of CPU that I have available to me. I have like 5 or 10% dedicated to not dying on the way on the trip. I can only assume it is a far greater burden. And it's just like, oh, what a hassle. But hey, I can use Teams now. So that's got to be so helpful and less of a tax for you. Now you can focus on the job.
There are no stairs on the
there are no stairs on Teams. That is awesome. I love that. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. How do you think about these whiteboards, though? Do you have to visualize? Like, Azure Cloud is all boxes and lines. How are you doing large architectural diagrams like that and visualizing large systems?
Okay, so that's a great question. The way I do it is I look at the diagram, and I'm zooming in to find the very beginning. Usually this is like the person icon at the far left of the drawing, right?
Yeah.
Web browser.
Right. Little stick, the little stick person. Yeah.
Exactly. I go from the person to the right and slowly start building in my mind a map. And I think what really helps me with this is I grew up on the Super Nintendo. So Final Fantasy, Legend of Zelda, all these games where you had to kind of build a mental map. I've ingrained in my mind, all right, place this object here, place this object here. So when I'm thinking of like an API gateway, a GraphQL middleware, what the backend servers look like, it's still in my mind registering as, you know, just another dungeon in a game.
Interesting. Okay, so you are holding it in your mind. You know, when you and I were getting on the call here, I noticed that when we're just speaking English colloquially, I'm saying things like, "Oh, can you see that?" and "Are you?" And I just said, "Now, can you visualize that?" Again, you can't speak for all blind people, but how does that feel when people say, "Hey, can you see our slides?" or "Can you see that file?" We don't necessarily mean literally see it; we might mean access it. But I'm curious how you feel about that.
I usually don't even think about it when it comes up. The one exception is when people say, should we blindly go into this? And ooh. I always think for a moment like, hey, I mean, that doesn't seem fair, but I understand the intent. And I know that what we're trying to talk about is way more important than this slight misstep.
What do you know? But that is something I had not thought about. And that's actually a useful thing to just remove from your speech. It's like I say, it's a small thing, but it's a little poke, a little like in the middle of a conversation that you didn't really expect. Fascinating.
It's the equivalent of when I'm zoomed in, a modal will pop up, a cookie modal. And I'm like, why can't I use this site anymore? What's going on here? And having to navigate around to find where's the accept all.
Yeah. So in you have your full-time job, you've got your family, and then you just happen to go and write a novel in your copious spare time. I'm not sure if you're doing this when the whole house is asleep or when you're finding the time, but you came out with The Work Ahead, a sci-fi novel. When did you end up doing this work?
During pandemic, just like with everyone else. So I, you know, I like to challenge myself. And the first challenge I had was like, I'm going to build my own Rubik's Cube so I can actually solve it while blind. Then I was like, oh, I'm going to go learn the guitar. And then I wanted to do something that I've always wanted to do, which is like put my thoughts down on paper. And I wanted to write, you know, kind of a more updated version of the Phoenix Project that was more accessible to everyone. So I wrote a sci-fi novel about agile DevOps and, you know, how to deal with really big challenges.
And is this in the kind of the style of Hitchhiker's Guide, or what is the vibe here of this kind of novel?
Wow, that's amazing. It's exactly the style that it's meant to be in. It's the story of a person who, like in the Hitchhiker's Guide, their world gets completely turned upside down in a way that, you know, you or I can't imagine. It's sci-fi, so it's big surprise. Sorry, spoiler alert, but aliens come and invade. And this person loses their fancy tech job and has to go work on a farm and goes through all the trials and tribulations of that work. And during that process, I'm hoping that the reader understands just under the surface is this message of how you work agile, how you deal with projects that are suddenly and chaotically thrown in an opposite direction, and how you deal with disruption in general.
Interesting. How you deal with disruption in general. That really is the metaphor, like throughout everything that we're talking about, because whether it be business disruption or digital disruption or alien attack or sudden blindness, right? These are all, how do you deal with disruption, speed bumps, and things that life happens to throw your way?
Disruption is a constant in life. It's probably the one constant that we will all experience again and again and again. And if you have tools to deal with disruptions as they come, it makes life a lot easier. Now, I'm not going to pretend that everyone can instantly blink and deal with disruptions. Personally, it took me a long time to get back to my new normal state.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that if you have the right tools, if you've got an attitude towards optimism, and that's something that we can all develop, then you absolutely can deal with anything. And if you've got a team of people that you're working with who are there to support you, that's probably the most powerful force in the universe.
Yeah, that definitely is true. I mean, we like to lionize people that like did it on themselves or pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps, but really it does take a village, and having a good support network is key.
Exactly. And one of the things that always struck me is how much the people at your job are part of that support network, whether you realize it or not. Because a lot of the projects, a lot of disruption that you face won't necessarily come in your personal life. It will probably come in your professional life. And if your support structure at work is built towards collaboration, and you've got the network of people that you can work with to deal with that disruption, that's when you can, one, start to be successful, but then two, lead a much more fulfilling professional life.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Samir, for chatting with me today.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Thank you for having me.
All right. We've been chatting with Samir Doshi. He does his writing under the name Samir Chopra. We'll put the link to The Work Ahead, a novel, in the show notes. I encourage you to check it out. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.